evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on The Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Friday, August 2nd, 2019. Sudanese authorities arrest paramilitary forces for killing civilians.
Kabashi says the suspects have been relieved from the active army service and handed over to the judiciary authorities so that they can be tried according to the procedures of the usual civilians' court.
And members of South Sudan's various political parties meet across the table to talk about elections.
Our hope is that this forum will be followed by a series of regular political dialogue to discuss concrete measures to sustain the permanent ceasefire, jointly discuss and agree on priorities, processes, and realistic timelines.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. Sudan's military authorities say they have arrested two suspects in connection with the killing of four demonstrators in Omdurman on Thursday. At least four protesters were gunned down and dozens others injured, according to Sudanese Medical Doctors Association, during a 1 million man march to demand justice for victims of military crackdown on protesters. Michael Atit has more for VOA from the Sudanese capital, Khartoum.
General Shamsuddin Kabashi, spokesman of the Transitional Military Council, told reporters in Khartoum today that they have arrested two suspects last night and are members of the Rapid Support Forces. Kabashi says the suspects have been relieved from the active army service and handed over to the judiciary authorities so that they can be tried according to the procedures of the usual civilians' court. On Wednesday, Sudanese military officials said they had arrested seven members of the Rapid Support Forces for killing people, including students in the city of Al Obeid, during a rally against fuel and bread shortages on Monday. The killings sparked large protests across Sudan. Thousands of Sudanese in Khartoum and other Sudanese cities took part in what was billed as a million-man march by the Sudanese professional associations to demand justice for the victims of the Sudanese revolution. The protesters waved the Sudanese flag and chanted slogans demanding that the perpetrators be tried in the court of law. Protester Ala Abdul Hadi, who joined thousands who marched in the Buri neighborhood east of Khartoum Thursday, says she wants to express her anger after her cousin was shot and killed on June 3rd during the crackdown on protesters outside military headquarters in Khartoum.
We've lost so many lives, okay, and the old regime have destroyed our country. We have witnessed the deterioration of the economic situation, the abuse of human rights, the deaths among our people. It's like our lives does not matter to them. As long as they are in charge, as long as they are able to abuse our country. This is why we're out here right now, because we cannot stop. It's not the right time to stop. We cannot stop right now.
The Sudanese Transitional Military Council and the Forces for Freedom and Change Coalition resumed talks Thursday night, following a break of more than a week in negotiations about defining the roles and responsibilities of civilians and military leaders in power. Abdul Hadi says the talks are taking too long because members of the military council are dragging their feet to delay formation of the civilian-led government.
They are trying to drag this for as long as possible so everyone can get tired, so everyone can get disappointed and exhausted mentally, physically, emotionally. We cannot do that.
The African Union's special envoy to Sudan, Mohamed Hassan Labat, told reporters in Khartoum today that the parties had a fruitful discussion last night and would continue discussions this evening to complete reviewing a constitutional document. The Transitional Military Council and the Forces for Freedom and Change Coalition have yet to agree on the fate of the Rapid Support Forces, among other issues, during the transitional period. For VOA News, I am Michael Atit in Khartoum.
Some members of political parties are calling for an agenda that prepares the country for elections as stipulated in the peace agreement. Party officials are holding a two-day forum in Juba under the theme, The Role of Political Parties in Peaceful Transitions. Wakes Simon Wudu reports for VOA from Juba.
Angelina Tenney, a member of the SPLM-IO, says the various parties need to address the lack of political space to prepare the nation for democratic elections.
We need to have that political space, the safe political space where everybody is able to express their views. And this is key for the political parties to discuss and to overcome and see how to address that challenge.
Tenney also says the political parties must address insecurity by restoring peace and stability so that refugees and IDPs can return home. Andrew Okoni, a member of the Democratic Change Party, says while the parties talk about implementation of the deal, the big elephant in the room no one is talking about are the tens of unregistered political parties in South Sudan, including many that sprang up during the peace talks in Addis Ababa and Khartoum.
Nobody knows whether they have their constitution that guides them, or whether they are registered and they are not registered, actually, because the registered political parties are only 14 till now, not even more than that. But also now what we have inside, there are so many political parties.
The two-day forum is being sponsored by the United Nations Mission in South Sudan, or UNMISS, and the United Nations Development Program, or UNDP. The two UN bodies hired external experts to share their experiences on transitional and constitutional support, peacemaking process, and democratic governance. Mustafa Somare, the Deputy Special Representative of the UN Secretary General in South Sudan, says the forum is aimed at helping the parties implement the peace deal with only 3 months remaining before the end of the pre-transitional period.
Our hope is that this forum will be followed by a series of regular political dialogue by yourselves as representatives of political parties to discuss concrete measures to sustain the permanent ceasefire, jointly discuss and agree on priorities, processes, and realistic timelines for full implementation of the revitalized agreement during the transitional period.
Somare says the end of the transitional period should lead to democratic elections. Some party officials at today's forum say other issues not addressed in the revitalized peace agreement should be handled separately by the political parties. Peter Lamboth is a member and secretary of information of the Sudan People's Liberation Movement, South Sudan's ruling party.
It is important that people form political parties based on an agenda, based on an ideology, a way to make life better for the people of South Sudan. So some of the political parties that I'm seeing do not have a framework, do not have an agenda. So it's good that we are making discussions so that they are able to position themselves now before the time for election, so that they have something to tell the people of South Sudan as to what it is they want to do for them.
The peace agreement requires the parties to hold national elections in 2022. For VOA News, I'm Wake Simon Wudu in Juba.
As South Sudan joins the rest of the world in marking World Breastfeeding Week, the UN Children's Agency, UNICEF, says exclusive breastfeeding rates in South Sudan have increased from 45% in 2010 to 74% in 2018. A senior official at South Sudan's Ministry of Health says the government is considering extending maternity leave for breastfeeding mothers. Viola Elias has more for VOA from Juba.
Diana Sekina looks content as she sits down to breastfeed her 5-month-old baby girl at the VIP lounge at the Palm Hotel in Juba. A few other mothers also breastfeed their babies in the same hall. Speaking in Arabic, Sekina says she is confident that breastfeeding makes her children grow healthier and stronger.
Okay, Rada Jenna. Oh, mehim said it.
Breastfeeding is very important because for me it serves as a method of family planning. The longer I breastfeed my baby, the longer it takes me to become pregnant. Until I stop breastfeeding my baby, I cannot conceive. Secondly, breastfeeding makes my children stronger because I normally breastfeed them for the duration of 2 years and 2 months.
Ronald Jacob, a father of 3-month-old, says he wants his wife to breastfeed their baby exclusively for at least the first 6 months. Speaking in Arabic, Jacob says some mothers fear breastfeeding in public.
Some South Sudanese and African cultures consider it a taboo when your wife removes her breast to breastfeed in the presence of other people. For me, I will always support my wife to breastfeed our baby when he cries.
Jacob encourages other men to make sure their wives eat well and to never physically abuse their wives, especially when their wives insisting that violence leads to reduction in a woman's breast milk. Dr. Alice Juan, a pediatrician and a child health officer at the National Health Ministry, says there's a huge difference between breast milk and formula milk bought at the pharmacy.
Most of the time, getting those milks, it's having few things that mostly available in the breast milk. And the most important thing that look at your child if you're giving formula feeds, and then they start getting overweight because of formula feeds. But if you're comparing to a child who's only breastfeeding, he will not get that overweight of getting from the formula feeds. So it's just like a substitute for those who can't breastfeed.
Joanne says the vast majority of women can breastfeed, even though they may think they do not produce enough breast milk to feed their babies. Makur Matur Koryom, Undersecretary at South Sudan Health Ministry, says exclusive breastfeeding helps prevent 6 early childhood killer diseases, including pneumonia.
Breastfeeding plays a crucial role in the survival, growth, and development of a child. Many children, illnesses such as pneumonia and diarrhea can be prevented by early initiation of an infant to breastfeeding within 1 hour of birth and exclusive breastfeeding for 6 months.
Koryom says the health ministry is looking into extending the mandatory period for maternity leave so that working mothers can continue breastfeeding.
The Minister of Health is also committed to ensure that working mothers are supported to do exclusive breastfeeding for the first 6 months. The ministry will work together with Public Service and Minister of Labour to review the maternity leave just after 6 weeks. To possibly 18 weeks.
Koryom says the government wants to see exclusive breastfeeding rate reach 98% in the next 5 years. For VOA News, I am Viola Elias in Juba.
You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, the Global Fund donates money to fight malaria and tuberculosis in South Sudan. That story is coming up right after this break.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today.
What plant is the most useful for your family in your garden?
Onions are the most used plants in our garden because in everything that we cook, we add onion. Yeah, I think that one is the answer. Onions and tomatoes.
The plant that is most useful for my family, I think it's ginger, because it's very useful to the family because we think it's medicinal and you use it to as a spice as well to prepare your food.
The most useful plant in our garden is groundnut, because one, it can be harvested earlier than any other crop in the garden.
In my family, we cherish bitter leaf. We call it onugu in our dialect. That's Igbo, precisely. It's a delicacy.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
South Sudan in Focus is now on WhatsApp. Send us a message on +1 202 630 8011 and we'll get back to you. Tell us what's happening in your area or give us your feedback on the stories you hear on South Sudan in Focus. We look forward to hearing from you on WhatsApp. That number again, +1 202 630 8011.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus. South Sudan has received another $10 million from the Global Fund to fight malaria, tuberculosis, and HIV/AIDS. The Director General for Medical Services at the National Health Ministry says about 60% of people visiting health centers across the country suffer from malaria. Ding Magod has this story for VOA from Juba.
2 weeks ago, 26-year-old Philip John accompanied his father, Jonah Till, to Freedom Hospital in Juba.
The reason for coming here was that my father was suffering from malaria, which has caused him anemia. He lost blood and we are here for his treatment.
Dr. Kediende Chang, the Director General for Medical Services at the National Health Ministry, says malaria affects all sectors of the population.
We are 100% at risk of getting malaria. Nobody is exempted from getting malaria. And malaria is responsible for most of our health issues. You go to the outpatient, those who come to the outpatient for consultation, you will see sometimes 40 to 60% are because of malaria.
Kediende says the government will ensure the Global Fund money is used to buy malaria drugs, carry out malaria prevention activities, and provide antiretroviral drugs to people living with HIV.
We are committed to make sure that we absorb all this money to do what is required. Before, we could ask the Global Fund to give us more money. The next year is also going to be a year for us to submit a new funding proposal.
$32 million has been allocated to treating and preventing HIV, $15 million to treat tuberculosis, and $70 million will go to malaria. According to the Health Ministry, Dr. Victoria Chut, HIV Program Manager at South Sudan's National Health Ministry, says a big problem in South Sudan is the stigma attached to HIV positive and AIDS patients.
And many of them don't want to come to our testing facilities to test for HIV, or don't even want to come for treatment when they are found positive, because they don't want to be seen as coming to the facilities, because the people will know that they're HIV positive.
The Global Fund donation has been managed by the Country Coordinating Mechanism, or CCM, which is comprised of donors, NGO representatives, health ministry officials, civil societies, and private sector representatives. CCM coordinator Elizabeth Novello says 190,000 people are living with HIV in South Sudan, with 32,000 of them receiving antiretroviral treatment. For VOA News, I am Digma Gott in Juba.
10 South Sudanese Mandela Washington Fellows are here in the District of Columbia for their final summit after weeks of visiting and working at various American institutions. Yesterday, Dennis Denya, Peter Garang Ngor, Kiden Zaid Zakaria, and Chol Duang Chol came to VOA to share their experience in the United States. We'll open this discussion with Chol Duang Chang Duang, a journalist with the South Sudan Broadcasting Corporation.
Where I was placed, the Bridgewater State University, that is in Boston, I had the opportunity to interact with the local community members, and I also had the opportunity to meet all sort of people in diverse setting of the American way of life. And I've seen that America was built based on hard work, and which is something that we need to encourage in the country, South Sudan.
Zaida, what is your take? What are the things that you will take from here when you go back to Juba?
Thank you very much. I am Zaida. The first thing I will take home is common good. I came here and realized that leaders work for the common good of everyone. No one does things because they want it for themselves or their children. And another thing is I take home with me my 5 top strengths. I came here and I got to know, as a leader, you need to know your strengths and how you can use those strengths to lead the people you're leading every day, and how you can use it to influence your community. We came here and we involved in community work. Every Wednesday was for community work. And I was put at the arboretum, and guess what's there? People keep insects, they take care of trees, flowers, grass. And me, for 7 years, I've been sitting in the office doing finance and administration, dealing with paperwork. I could never think that insects are important. One thing I learned to know that the environment is for all of us. It is not only for human beings. So at the arboretum, I saw insects were taken care of. The insects help pollinate the flowers. These ones, they go and they help the trees grow. This one helps to take the water down. The human beings, I mean, I was so shocked. I have never thought that the world was like that.
Peter, this is a learning environment for you, a learning experience, and it seems like you are burning to say something. Tell me what you've learned here.
Thank you so much. As an activist, I think how people view activism in our spaces, they view activism as enemies of sometimes as critics of whatever decision that is being made. But as part of my job is that I'm a reformer activist, not just a radical activist. And this is something actually that I need to take home. To be a reformer activist, you need to be involved at the table. It's not just about making noise, but it's about to bring the stakeholders together for the common good. And then using the skills that I've learned from here is that I have to go through community leaders and the chiefs. We sit together with them, identify the problems, and then see how best we can address the root causes to teenage pregnancies and HIV/AIDS in South Sudan.
Let me hear from Dennis. What is your experience then?
Well, it's a very good question. I met these guys in town, and they're like, "Hey, how you doing, man?" It's like, it's important, you know, kind of, "Hey, bro, what's up, man?" Like, and then I met these black Americans. I mean, the guy was speaking to me in his accent, and I couldn't hear any word at all. Like, "Hey, bro," like, you know, the guy can go very fast, like, you know, "How's Africa?" Like, blah, 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 blah. And I could stand there, I'm like, "What's this guy saying?" So each time I see this guy, he wants to have a conversation with me, but because I can't hear him, so I have to avoid him. Each time I see him, I have to go the opposite way because, like, I really can't get, you know, whatever he says. But, well, that is part of the culture that we came to interact with. As they say, the food was, to me, I think it didn't go right with me. You see me like this, I've added too much weight. I've added too much weight, and almost everything is cold. I'm like, oh. The way we do things there is totally different here. So there's a lot that we learned. And then I looked for South Sudanese. I couldn't find any South Sudanese there. So it's a little bit different. But there is much to that. As Zaida has said before, the culture of work, the value to time, knowing that time is very important. And if you're for business, mean what you're doing. So those are a few things that we have learned. Personally, I have learned them. Right now, I want to eat kisir. I want to eat combo. I want to really get down to Juba and then start eating whatever I've been eating.
Those are Dennis Denya, Peter Garang Moore, Kiden Zaida Ibrahim, and Chol Duang Chan Duang, Mandela Washington Fellows, who came to our studios to talk about their fellowship in the United States. In the second part of our discussion on Monday, you will hear what the fellows want to take back home.
South Sudan in Focus is now on WhatsApp. Send us a message on +1 202 630 8011 and we'll get back to you. Tell us what's happening in your area or give us your feedback on the stories you hear on South Sudan in Focus. We look forward to hearing from you on WhatsApp. That number again, +1 202 630 8011.
Well, a lot of you have written to us, and it's time for us to read some of your comments. We are taking both good and bad ones. Martin Manuel writes, "I'm a South Sudanese journalist working in Uganda. I always listen to VOA podcast news after I listen to BBC. I thank the entire hardworking team of Voice of America. Please keep the great work moving forward. I keenly listen to South Sudan in Focus because of so many reasons. It's well balanced and covers the entire country." Another one, listener writes, "Hello, this is your fellow Santiago Pot in Juba. I am inspired by the good work you are doing. Keep doing it." Borna Ball, a medical student in Cuba, writes, "As the president of South Sudanese Students in Cuba, I would like to be added to your WhatsApp group, South Sudan in Focus." And Mr. Makum Top writes, "Hello from Khartoum. I would like your news and the way you deliver it to the public, and I want to have more audio from you every day if possible." Ngor Kwat Garang from Juba writes, "Hello, I'm a regular listener of South Sudan in Focus. I can truly describe your wonderful program in its deserved deliberations. It's a demonstration of how peace can be achieved in a war-torn country. What South Sudan in Focus means to us is that We are not completely forgotten because there are people working hard to make our voices heard. James Mawa from South Sudan writes, I'm happy to be connected to VOA's South Sudan in Focus. Tonj Did Men writes from Lake States, hello VOA, I'm happy to be a listener. And Ismail Gift from Rhino Camp in Uganda writes, I really enjoy VOA South Sudan in Focus. I would like to know into details why our president banned the singing of the national anthem. Well, Ismail, I don't have answer for that. Another listener writes, I am Iguya Stephen from Busoga, Eastern Uganda. You have put us on the map. Moroni Justin from South Sudan writes, I am very happy to be part of this big family of VOA. Another listener who did not provide his name has some criticism about our work. He begins by writing, thanks for the program updating South Sudanese with the latest news and development. But sometimes the audio of your reporters are not very clear, and besides, those translating Arabic to English do not capture the correct words. So VOA needs to improve by getting right translators. Another one writes, hello VOA, I'm Jal Jal Akon from South Sudan. I would like to thank VOA team for the work they are doing across the globe, and especially my country, South Sudan. But you need to send your personnel across the country to get news. Otherwise, I'm grateful to what you are doing. Another unidentified listener writes, hello VOA, I would like to thank Jongle Judge for showing to his fellow colleagues across South Sudan that there is no one above the law. Charles John Avelino from Juba writes, hello VOA, I'm very happy to listen to VOA. We, the youth of South Sudan, are not happy because of the implementation of the peace agreement. Our leaders are only thinking of their family members and not about our nation. Another listener who prefers to call himself G2G Kelly or Emmanuel Malish Hakim writes, I thank God that I'm connected to the awesome media that does not hide the truth, hits on the point, and reveals the hidden. I feel totally disappointed with the decision made on the banning of the national anthem. My question is the national anthem only for the president and the government? Kuku Abdallah writes, hello, I'm happy to be connected to VOA. And finally, Maurice Henry from Juba writes, hello VOA, South Sudan in Focus. Could you please find out for us, the people of Lanya, if our members of parliament are there representing us in the Transitional Legislative Assembly? Because most of them are not known except Dusman and Thomas Wani. Please send us your comments. Our WhatsApp number is +202-630-8011. And that brings us to the end of our show for this Friday. We now leave you with the song Yangada Gadia by Amy J. Yore from Yambio.
Vala.
We've been listening to Emi J. Yore with the song Yangada Gadia. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for listening. Have a good weekend and join us next week for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.